stream it. So those are, it authorizes the whole host of restoration services. So just about anything, all the things that Liz
would... And how many stakeholders are managed through the Panhandle Forest Collaborative, and how shared stewardship, we're going to talk more about that concept in a moment, is implemented with the Good Neighbor Authority. So welcome back with myself, Liz Johnson Gephardt, John Songster, and Ed Winkert. We're going to turn now, John and Ed, to your areas a bit. So first of all, we've been throwing out this term, Good Neighbor Authority, and these concepts, shared stewardship. Give us some background on both of those, how they come together.
Sure. So I can give you a little history on the Good Neighbor Authority and what that's all about. The Good Neighbor Authority was actually piloted by the state of Utah in 2001, and then they expanded that to Colorado a couple years later. And what the Good Neighbor Authority is it allows...
I've been living off the grid the whole time since I moved here on a mountain outside of Priest River.
All right. Nice, nice. And so give us just a thumbnail sketch of what you do with the Priest River Forest Connection.
Sure. So we got started in about the year 2000. A group got together in Priest River to deal with the management, forest management issues, especially economically. And our group became one of the first nonprofits that ever implemented a stewardship contract for the Forest Service. And that was up at Priest Lake called the Lake Face Lamb. We pretty much morphed into our group, which we are now today, the Priest Community Forest Connection. And we do a lot of forest stream, that sort of restoration work with different agencies. We also have a number of education programs for our local students. We try and get them out in the woods and learn about what's going on out there and how to be respectful and responsible as they're playing out in our wonderful outdoors.
Nice. John, tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to be here in North Idaho and working for the Department of Lands on the Good Neighbor Authority.
Sure. So I'm a native of North Central Pennsylvania, and I got involved in forestry and fire at a pretty early age, decided that that's what I wanted to do with my life and my career. And actually, the thing that brought me out here was a wildfire. I was interning with our state forestry agency at the time throughout college. And one of the first wildfires that I went on was actually in the state of Florida. That's a tough place to go on a wildfire. Mm-hmm. Lots of creepy crawlers and things that bite. And then I found myself out here. I flew into Spokane. I was on a wildfire out here and really intrigued with the area. And I started thinking about how I could get myself back out this way. And I applied for a graduate program at U of I and went through that program. And after college, stuck around, worked in a number of different areas in the forestry sector. I did a little bit of time with the Natural Resource Conservation Service, industrial forestry, and eventually found myself with the Idaho Department of Lands with the Good Neighbor Program.
And we're going to talk a good bit about the Good Neighbor Program in a little bit, but let's continue on now with our introductions. Ed, tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to North Idaho and to be doing what you're doing with the Department of Lands.
Yeah, thanks, Phil. I'm from the local area, or I grew up just across the Washington-North Idaho border. In the little town of Clayton, just north of Deer Park, or 25 miles north of Spokane. First got an interest in forestry through a high school FFA program, and that transitioned into pursuing a degree in forestry from Spokane Community College, and then later a degree in forest ecosystem management at the University of Idaho. While I was going to college, I was fortunate enough to get on with the Idaho Department of Lands and just worked up through the ranks, starting on the timber crew to a resource foreman, forest technician. And then once I received my degree from the U of I, a full-time forestry position opened up at Priest Lake, my dream job, and was able to transition into that. Worked for 28 years up at Priest Lake, and in 2015, when IDL jumped full into the GNA idea, I volunteered for a pilot project up at Priest Lake, and that kind of transitioned into some promotional opportunities, and later became the program manager. So now mm-hmm. I oversee the commercial timber sale mm-hmm. program statewide for mm-hmm. GNA.
We have an awful lot of horsepower in the studio this morning for subjects related to forestry, and it has a rich history here locally of how it's helped shape our communities both economically and culturally, and yet it doesn't come without controversy. There are a lot of different viewpoints and interests at stake when we talk about the management of lands, and that's the main crux of this morning's conversation. We're going to talk about how we go about resolving, or if not resolving, at least handling that wide variety of input that we get, especially in our public lands and our state lands. And so that's a tee up, Liz, for us to start with going into the Panhandle Forest Collaborative. And tell us, first of all, a little bit about the Panhandle Forest Collaborative, its short version of its mission and its history.
So we got together, I think, a group of us in about 2009 or so. And I think the biggest thing was that we had a lot of diverse interests that had different concerns about what was going on in our forests. And I'm going to say especially on federal lands, because we felt like the public was not being involved in the public land management. And I think the thing that really got most folks interested in this is their dedication to how much they love these lands. And they want to be able to use them in the manner that is pleasing to them. Let's say recreation. It could be timber harvest. It could be kayaking on a river. It's just really the way that we would like to see things being taken care of. So we have about a 12-member, 15-member group, but we typically at our meetings have up to 30 and 40 people that are involved. And when I say members, we are talking about people that are actually voting on the stuff that we're trying to put forward with the Forest Service. And we typically do work with the Forest Service, but as we're going to talk about it in a little bit, we are also now working with Idaho Department of Lands because there's this shared management system going on right now. I believe that the reason people are gathering together to talk about things and to see if we can make some really good decisions that will help move forest management ahead, take care of aquatics, take care of recreation, take care of vegetation management, fuels reduction. There's so many different things that we talk about. And I think it's bringing everybody's different experiences and knowledge forth and kind of advising, I guess is the word, the Forest Service and how they move forward in getting their projects on the ground.
Mm-hmm. That's a good summary. Is there, were there any critical moments either in the early days that you could help share with how it got started or what kept it going?
I think the reason we got started is at the time Representative Minnick thought that the public needed to have a voice in what these decisions were being made by the Forest Service especially. And so he kind of just gathered a huge group together, but it kind of morphed into what the people who are really dedicated and motivated and are on the ground pretty much on a daily basis, because we see what's going on and what isn't going on. And so I think that the real pushing point is to get things moving forward, keep the projects out of litigation, which was going on a lot when we got started, and to see if we can work with our agency folks and get things that are interesting to us, but at the same time really important to the environment, mm-hmm. push forward and hopefully successfully. We mm-hmm. learn lessons. Sometimes we do things wrong. Sometimes we do things really right. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want, is the public to be involved and help guide us forward in that position.
What are some of the benefits of collaborating like that?
For me personally, it's how much I've learned. And I think that's the greatest thing with our group, is that because we come from so many different facets, so many different focal points, that we all learn from one another. I've also learned how many amazing people are involved in this sort of work.
Mm-hmm. Along the way now, it's been how many years since 2009, you said?
I think it's like 14.
So 14 years. Can you tell us about any of the success stories, any outstanding examples of where the collaboration has had a really tangible benefit, so we can bring this from the theoretical down mm-hmm. to something really concrete?
That's great. I like that. I guess I'll use the example of the Bottom Canyon Project, which is in the northern area of the Coeur d'Alene District, because we do work with the Sandpoint, Priest Lake, and the Coeur d'Alene District of the Forest Service. And it was a great project because they were trying to do a lot of restoration work, because in many years ago, they had what they called these jammer roads, which were roads that were just built on top of each other and on back and forth and back and forth. And so they were causing some serious problems aquatically, especially. It's also a heavily used recreation area, mostly motorized, but there's a lot of non-motorized as well. Forest Service saw a lot of disease and insects going on in that area, and they really wanted to do some treatments to reduce the risk of fire, but also to bring back some seral species such as larch, possibly white pine, etc., to the area. So we were starting to work with the district down there in Coeur d'Alene, and we were challenged by the forest supervisor at the time. And she said, well, if you all are so interested in this, how about if you bring an alternative forward for us to consider? And many of you might know that the Forest Service typically puts out 3, maybe 4 or 5 alternatives for every project, which then they get pared down to what's actually going to be done on the ground. And that was the first time that's ever happened to me in my so many years of doing this kind of thing. And it was a challenge. And many of us, I would say the core group, the 12 or so, we worked, I would say, at least 3 years weekly on putting this alternative together, many field trips. We were looking at aquatics. We were looking at different road issues. We were looking at a lot of root rot in the Doug fir stands in that area. There's a lot of dispersed camping in that area. And all these things, in the long run, they all work together or don't. So we were challenged by this, and we put together an alternative and presented that to the Forest Service. And it was pretty much the one that they chose. There was a few tweaks to it, especially with some road things. But it really proved that to them, as well as to the PFC, that this works, because we came up with some ideas that they had not thought of. And they were saying, well, this is what we would really like to get done. And then we were like, well, why are you only treating that many acres? I think it was like 900 acres out of 50,000. And we were like, why aren't we treating more acres so that we get a better result on the ground overall? And that's what we worked out. We did prescribed burning. We took out some of these old roads and old culverts, turned them into trails. We did a lot of stuff on aquatics. There were some culverts and some bridges, etc., that needed to have some work. We had to move a road up out of a stream area. So there was a whole bunch of things, but to me that was a huge success, because the work is still being done, but it was really the public's voice that helped the Forest Service get this on the ground.
Now let's delve just a little deeper into a couple of things. I think it's probably easy for a number of listeners to be hearing more acres and identify that with a larger timber production. But tell us about the benefits specifically for recreation and conservation that accrue from this approach.
This project had a lot of that, which I was really pleased with. As I mentioned, that there was a lot of old roads that were detrimental to our streams, etc. And so we talked to it was a lot of motorized recreation, but there was also non-motorized folks in the room, and we really talked about how we can make that better for these folks that want to go out and enjoy the outdoors, but not detrimental to the soils, to the water, and to the trees. Mm-hmm. And so we turned some of these roads into trails, that these people now have trails that they like. So they aren't going off-road and ripping all over the place. Or for trails that are along streams for non-motorized, so you get to enjoy that wonderfulness. Timber management, absolutely. And in a lot of ways, that timber management, those receipts that come from those trees, not only help our communities economically, but it also helps get these other non-vegetation management activities done on the ground. Mm-hmm. In other words, we're paying for it by taking out some of these trees that were, you know, root rot pockets, or maybe might have been beetle. And then we replant that right away. We even had a lot of discussions on, well, how we were going to replant it, and please don't use this, and please use that. And it was a really, really great discussion.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other projects besides Bottom Canyon that you'd like to talk about?
We're working on a number of them right now. We've got a project down by Hayden Lake, Honey Badger. There's a project, two projects actually, on the east side of Lake Ponderay. One is called Buckskin Saddle. Again, there's a lot of recreation issues there. Chloride Gold, again, a lot of recreation there that we would like to help move along in a responsible manner, because we're going to use it. We're all out there. We all love it. We just want to get it right. And then there's another project over by Priest Lake. It's called the Kenexcu. And so we're just getting started on doing the actual studies on the ground on what needs to be done there. So we're kind of all over the place. And what I love is every project and every area is different. Mm-hmm. There's different challenges. There are different habitats to deal with. There are different stream areas that we need to work with. Could it be a bad bridge or somebody ripping through there with their mountain bike or, you know, things like that. So we try and bring that all together. It's challenging, but it's really rewarding.
Mm-hmm. And there are some non-timber related projects, mm-hmm. or at least tangentially timber related projects. There's recreation. Yep. Tell us a little bit about some of those.
Recreation, again, it's for us, it's really about trails, and we really want to help. And in my mission with my organization is to help the public understand that we have some very sensitive areas in our woods that are really important, and habitats, different habitats, could be a threatened flower, it could be an animal that we're trying, the flammulated owl, that we're trying to help their habitats. And so through different recreation activities, we get to enjoy that, but we need to make sure that we're not doing it in a manner that's destroying mm-hmm. those different habitats. Timber management is really important. It's not the only thing that we concentrate on. Fuels reduction is super important, especially around our communities. Many of you have probably heard of the Wildland Urban Interface, the WUI, and that's very important, and we do concentrate on those areas to keep our communities safe as well.
Mm-hmm. And all this work projects out over a length of time. I know there's a planning process. Tell us about that.
There is a big planning process. I mean, I would say typically a project is, once we start putting it on paper, it takes maybe 3 to 5 years to actually get it down, because we need to go out and do all those different studies. I mean, where are the threatened and endangered areas? Where are the streams running? Are they intermittent streams, or are they year-round streams? Are they bull trout streams? Where are the flammulated owls or the goshawks? So there's a lot of those studies that go into it. Then we put that all together and try and do our best to merge all that and help it. Again, sometimes we do things that aren't perfect, but that's how you learn. And most times we get it pretty darn good.
So if someone's listening and wants to get involved, how can they go about becoming part of or engaging with the Panhandle Forest Collaborative?
And we encourage that, Phil. We really, really want people to come and engage in this. You don't have to be a member, which means you vote on what we're going to present to the Forest Service, but we still think what you have to say and your experiences and knowledge is important. We meet every other month, typically, on the third Wednesday of every other month. I think our last meeting was in March, so our next meeting would be in May. Typically, we also meet in Sandpoint, but many times we're out in the field, which is my favorite. And we go on field trips to actually see what's going on the ground and what needs to be helped and what's just doing fine. I would say we're working on a new website right now, and Phil's helping me with that, actually. And we should have that up and running in May. But if you really want to get involved with this, you can get a hold of me. I'm sure Phil has my contact information. And we also are facilitated by the National Forest Foundation. And we've got a facilitator there. She's out of Missoula, but she's been working with us for quite some time. And that's another way you can get in touch with us.
Okay, excellent. We're going to take a short song break here. Before we do, if you've just joined us, this morning we're talking about the Panhandle Forest Collaborative and the Idaho Department of Land's Good Neighbor Authority with Liz Johnson Gephardt, co-chair of the Panhandle Forest Collaborative, executive director of the Priest Community Forest Connection. And next up, we'll be talking with John Songster, the bureau chief of the Idaho Department of Land's Good Neighbor Authority, and Ed Wingert, the program manager for the same. Again, we're going to take a short song break, and then we'll be back. So hang in there.
Management. And the state of Idaho, through the IDL, we have agreements with most of the national forests in the state and also the Bureau of Land Management. So the way it got started in Idaho, through the 2014 Farm Bill, they took those pilot programs, Good Neighbor Authority programs from Colorado and Utah, and they expanded the authority, the Good Neighbor Authority, nationally. And at the same time, through the 2014 Farm Bill, they also amended the Healthy Forest Restoration Act, if you remember that, Liz. Mm-hmm. And what that did is that allowed the governors of states to work with the national forests and the public to identify areas of high risk for either wildfire or insect and disease. And so IDL worked with the national forests. They worked with the collaboratives around the states to look at the forests and really try to focus in on where those areas of high threat were. So that designation went to Washington. I can't recall exactly how many acres were identified throughout the state of Idaho, but an awful lot of acres were in this high-risk category. And then the governor and our land board and legislature, they started looking at other things, other provisions in the Farm Bill, and said, okay, how can the state get involved in addressing these issues? And they started looking at the Good Neighbor Authority. And in 2015, the legislature at the time, they passed a resolution which instructed the Idaho Department of Lands to start investigating this new authority, or fairly new authority, called the Good Neighbor Authority. And slowly we began to stand up a program that's centered around this authority that allows us to work in partnerships with the National Forest and the Bureau of Land Management.
Mm-hmm. So tell me if I'm hearing this right. So it allows the state and the federal government, the Forest Service, to work together. Are they working on each other's properties, for lack of a better way to put it? Or are they just combining things at the border, let's say, and coming up with common strategies for lands that are contiguous?
It can really work either way. So it allows for projects, what we call cross-boundary projects, so one project that's encompassing lands that may be administered by the state and also federal lands, or, which is most often the case with our program, what we're doing is we're providing added capacity to really lending a helping hand to the national forests. And the neat thing about the Good Neighbor Authority is it allows for use of state processes. And so oftentimes those processes are just a little faster, a little more nimble. We frequently find that we have an easier time contracting with local contractors than through the federal processes, which can be kind of cumbersome. And so it's been a great relationship. We're involved in all kinds of different restoration activities, from commercial timber harvest to prescribed burning, non-commercial fuels treatments. We do a lot of road work through the authority, and that includes stream crossings and bridges and culvert replacements. So involved in all kinds of work, and just continues to evolve and grow year after year.
And again, just for the sake of clarity for folks listening, this isn't in the planning process, something's being ignored. It's in the implementation phase where the greatest efficiencies are found.
Correct. Yeah. So that's typically where state partners become involved through the Good Neighbor Authority, is in that implementation phase of the project.
It seems like this is probably a pretty obvious question. We'll throw it out there anyway. What are the benefits of this approach?
Well, so for the state, the trust lands, the Department of Lands manages, are very intermingled with federal lands. And, what we are aware of is that there are some really serious issues on some of the federal lands in terms of threats from wildfire and insect and disease. And if we have those issues occurring on adjacent lands, then there's a risk of those issues then coming on to federal lands or private lands. And so that's why we want to get involved and help with these projects.
So what you're talking about is when we look at a map of the area, we see places that are checkerboarded. It's those checkerboarded lands.
Correct. Yeah, we did an analysis a few years ago, and it turns out that something like 90% of the state's trust lands are share a boundary somewhere on those parcels. So there's a lot of intermingled lands, and we're looking to help out on the national forests.
Thank you. Ed, let's turn locally to how it's being implemented. Our program manager, you're the guy on the ground doing it. And tell us about how that's going and maybe a couple success stories.
Yeah, so thanks, Phil. We have a lot of projects that the Panhandle Collaborative has looked at in the realm of GNA. GNA is really just an extension of the Forest Service through our partnership, and we're working on federal ground and basically sales that are on the Panhandle's 5-year plan. And the collaborative basically focuses on projects that are on the north zone of the Panhandle. So in conjunction with our partners and the Forest Collaborative, we've had a lot of success with our GNA sales on the north zone of the Panhandle. Starting at Hannah Flats, Jasper Mountain, Black Boulder, the list goes on. The benefit of working with the Forest and the Collaborative is just increasing pace and scale and getting input early on in the process. The Collaborative is really a large part of the public involvement process. They have a lot of people from different interest groups or areas that can comment on our projects and really shape those projects so that we're successful when we bring those projects to the table and we sell them. It's just been a great relationship.
Is there a particular project maybe we could go into a little bit of detail and say, this is how the Good Neighbor Authority really helped this particular project, whatever it is?
Sure. One of the ones that we're working on right now or that we've worked on the last couple years is our Scatterlands project just south of the Pend'Oreille River down to the Kootenai-Bonner County line, and it extends from the Washington-Idaho border over to Highway 95. And it's focusing on a bunch of scattered Forest Service parcels, hence the name Scattered Lands. We started 2-3 years ago on the project with a couple commercial timber sale units right around the Blanchard area called Scattered Lands 7 and 8. We also sold a sale called Albany GNA Ton that's right along the 41 corridor. And then we're just marching kind of from the west to the east, picking up different commercial and non-commercial fuels treatment opportunities with an upcoming sale in the Hoodoo Valley GNA Ton sale. And then we have folks working on the Long Mountain sale. And all along, the Forest Collaborative has been really supportive and providing input that has shaped those projects. The beauty of this project, it's also located in our shared stewardship North Idaho Priority Landscape. And it was mentioned earlier on the show about cross-boundary management. And that's really what we're trying to accomplish in that priority landscape. And GNA is really the vessel to treat the Forest Service land. And then our shared stewardship coordinators, along with our private forestry specialists, are reaching out to the rest of the private landowners in that landscape to try to focus on management within a short time frame, 5-10 years, to try to get everybody on board and in this group effort to treat fuels and insect and disease issues in that area and accomplish this cross-boundary approach.
That's a really interesting part of it, I think, the private lands component. Tell us a little bit more about how those private lands become either part of the project or the activities are facilitated separately.
Yeah, so there's a ton of outreach. If you look at large industrial private, they've been managing for a long time. They have everything planned out. Same with IDL endowment. But the smaller private landowners, it's difficult for those folks to get involved in forest management or fuels management on their property. But through shared stewardship, it's a vessel. Our coordinators are reaching out to the public through public meetings, sending out mailers, passing out postcards, holding community meetings. And it's really just to let private landowners know about the grant opportunities that are out there through NRCS, through Bonner County, EQIP, Joint Chiefs, that sort of thing, so that, that private individuals can get funding to help with the management on their ground. And that's really the beauty of this whole idea, the shared stewardship.
So let's tie it in a little bit more closely with the work of the Panhandle Forest Collaborative. And Liz, let's come back to you to talk about how that's working.
I love what Ed was just saying, and just to bring it around a little bit with the private landowners, I own 100 acres. And so there are many people that don't know that these programs are, just like Ed said. I really, really think this program is so exciting because it's brought a lot more people into the fold of understanding what their forests are and what they need. And I love that it's called Good Neighbor, because that is what it is. We all know and understand, I think, that insects, disease, fire, they don't care if there's a property boundary there. That it's going to cross. So in working on these projects in this way, I just feel it's so beneficial to our communities, to our private landowners, to the economics, all the way around. I'm really excited about it. I think that's how the Panhandle Forest Collaborative got so involved, is because we know that those private lands are out there. We know the endowment lands, state lands are there, and the federal lands. We're all intermixed. Let's play in the same sandbox. Let's get some work done, and let's make this a better environment for our wildlife, for our recreation interests, for our water, go on and on. Yeah, I'm very excited about the Good Neighbor Authority.
So as we come close to a close here, tell us, going forward, what does it all hold? John, we'll start with you.
Sure. Well, we have a lot of work to do, but we're headed in the right direction. The agencies are working in close collaboration, Forest Service, the BLM, the state, the county, the NRCS. We're all working together. We have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of new folks moving into the area, and we got to continue to educate people about fire, about forest health. But we're definitely heading on in the right direction, and we're going to look to the collaborative to help shape and design these projects and provide the local input that we need to make sure we're getting the job done and we're doing it right.
And that's what I think is so important about having a group such as the Panhandle Forest Collaborative. We're all working together, bringing our knowledge and our experience to the same room, to the same forest area, and actually really making it a better environment for all of us.
Great. So again, before we leave here, final closing thoughts, and you know, Ed, maybe we'll start with you. The listeners can't see this, but we're going to go literally around the table here in the studio. And any parting thoughts before we end today's interview?
Yeah, I just want to mention, you know, get involved. You know, in the collaborative, it's really a good group of folks. If you want to help shape what's going on your public lands, I highly encourage to attend the meetings. You don't have to be a voting member to provide input, and just find out what's going on our public lands. And if you do own acreage in the wildland urban interface, we all need to do our part. We have a real wildfire crisis and insect and disease issue out there today that we really need to address. And it takes cross-boundary management to address that issue. As Liz said, fire, insects, and disease really know no boundaries. So we all need to do our part to manage our forests, protect ourselves and our neighbors.
Thank you, Ed. Tough act to follow, but John,
you're going to follow that. Basically, second everything that Ed said, and then just make a pitch to the private landowners out there. I hope they are aware there are a lot of resources out there. There are technical services and assistance provided through the state, also through NRCS and the county. You can get on our website, idl.idaho.gov. Lots of information out there. So just encourage everybody to take advantage of all those great resources.
And I will second all of that. it's great. And I guess this is a perfect example, is that we're all sitting here around this table, so to speak, and we're collaborating right here. I mean, talking about what the issues are and what we can do to help them. I will encourage everyone to get involved with this as well. And one really easy way to get a hold of the Panhandle Forest Collaborative is to actually email our facilitator, Maisie Powell, and she's working with the National Forest Foundation, and get your pencil. The address for her is mpowell, at nationalforests.org.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And I want to thank our guests. As always, if you've just tuned in, you can listen to a podcast of this show or many of our older shows at krfy.org. This morning, we've been talking about forestry management issues and a collaborative approach through the Panhandle Forest Collaborative and the state's Good Neighbor Authority with Liz Johnson-Gephardt, co-chair of the PFC and executive director of Priest Community Forest Connection, John Songster, bureau chief of Idaho Department of Land's Good Neighbor Authority, and Ed Wingert, program manager for the Good Neighbor Authority. Thank you all for coming on the show this morning.
Thank you, Phil.
Thanks, Phil.